Tim Forbes joins us on Sports Byline. He has authored a book that I've been waiting for a long time. It's called It's Game Time Somewhere, How 1 Year, 100 Sporting Events, and 50 Different Sports Changed My Life. Now, Tim grew up in the farmlands of northern Connecticut, and he played Division III basketball. And after 15 years spent in corporate America, Tim went on to work for three professional golf tours, including the LPGA Tour and the PGA Tour. You know, Tim, when I think about this book and the history of you and you making a change at 40 years old, was this created by a midlife crisis?
No, what it really was is I was born probably 10 years too early. When it came time to go to college, there wasn't any such thing as a sports management program like they have at so many universities now. So, but sports was my life. I mean, I grew up playing a game every single day, depending on season, and so that's where I would have gone into college. But because it wasn't available, I went into business, and eventually got my MBA, and went to work in the corporate world. And then, about age 40, was when it kind of filtered through to me that hey, people are getting paid to work in sports. I need to do something to work that out for myself. And long story short, I made a deal with my wife, the most understanding woman in the world. And the upshot of it was that I started all over again and went back to school at the Professional Golfers Career College so I could start all over again at the bottom of the sports business.
What were the seeds of your passion? Because I found that when people make that kind of life-altering change, it usually has to do with some type of passion.
Primarily golf, but all sports. Now, golf was more than just a game to me because it was my first job. I was working as a caddy at a local golf course, and I just loved the environment and the camaraderie, the way people kind of interact with each other when they were playing. So I loved everything about golf, and I continued to play. And so when the kind of the planets aligned that I could actually make a living in the world of golf, I could not do that.
What did you find is the difference between the sport of golf and the business of golf?
I think that the two are very, very closely connected, and I think that the people that go into the world of golf usually are very, very emotionally tied to the sport when they get there. But what happened to me was an occupational hazard that I think most people that work in golf will tell you, and that is that it's almost like being locked in a candy store overnight, and after a while you figure, well, there's such a thing as too much candy. And so you stop playing, and you stop kind of talking about it, and you stop watching. I mean, I was on site at so many tournaments that I never even stepped out of the trailer to see what was going on the course. So I would say that the sport and the business are intertwined, but that people tend to drift away from the sport when they work in the business.
I'm often asked when I give speeches about my favorite group of athletes, and certainly golfers would be high on my list. I think NASCAR drivers are as well, because the interviews with them are fascinating. First of all, they're very, very thoughtful. They're insightful. And I think part of it goes with, at least in golf, that a lot of these guys came up through having gone to colleges and played it there. Is that a fair statement for me to say, Tim?
I would say, yeah, for sure. And also, both of those sports are so cerebral in nature. I mean, you're constantly thinking. I think in golf, golfers probably think a little too much. But you know, you're alone with your thoughts. I would imagine in a NASCAR cockpit, and also on the golf course, you may have a caddy, you may have a playing partner, but there's a constant train of thought that's going through. So I think that the people that are a little bit more cerebral in nature and what they're doing tend to be so outside the sport as well.
The three tours that you work with was the Futures Tour, the LPGA Tour, and the PGA Tour. Let me ask you about the dichotomy between the LPGA Tour and the PGA Tour. Take me inside both of them.
The one overriding difference between the two is that women are far better at selling, far better at marketing their sport. They have an almost inbred feeling that, hey, if I don't market women's golf, we may never be seen. And so they're very, very attuned to making fans happy, making sponsors happy. And for the most part, there was never really a player that I ever approached to do something for a sponsor or for a tournament that wasn't delighted to help out. The men's side is a little different. They travel in a little bit more of a bubble. You know, they've got their representation with them at all times, and they're kind of shielded from, you know, the nuts and bolts of what goes into putting on a really great golf tournament. You know, they show up and they play and then they tend to leave.
One thing about the PGA for a long while, and I think maybe the PGA was concerned about this, and if I'm wrong about it, Tim, please correct me, is that it might have become a one-trick pony to some degree when Tiger was demolishing the fields and everything. And now, of course, the great, you know, Rory McIlroy and all the others like him that are out there have made it far more interesting. Is that a good observation on my part?
Yeah, you're spot on. I think everybody was a little bit worried that, because obviously Tiger's run couldn't last forever, and there was so much focus on him. So I think that people were a little concerned that there was nothing coming up through the pipeline in terms of new talent, but obviously that's been answered in spades by several different players, Rory being the most prominent of them. And I think the sport is a little younger, a little bit more fun, and it appeals to a little bit wider audience now, which probably people didn't expect, you know, 10 years ago.
You know as well as I do that when it comes to sports, at least leaving their mark on the American scene, and especially with the American sports fan, you really have to have homegrown athletes and personalities. And I really think the LPGA is at a crossroads when it comes to that, because they're being dominated by the South Korean golfers right now, and a lot of people cannot relate to them. I mean, if I were to ask any golf fan out there that knew the LPGA Tour, tell me the most notable American female player, they might be hard-pressed to do that. Is that a challenge for that tour?
Oh, it is the challenge for the tour. You know, they will tell you, and rightfully so, that they are truly an international tour, and they truly are. They play not just in Korea, but throughout the Southeast Asia and in Mexico. They definitely have done the globalization probably even better than the men have. There's not a single person on the LPGA staff that wouldn't love to have another 6 or 7 domestic tournaments on the schedule, for sure.
I'm going to talk about the book in the next segment I do with you, but I will allude to this. There is a wonderful chapter in there in which you talk about your years as being on the bag, the caddy, and I think that probably is the best seat at any sporting event. Take me through some of the things that you saw, that you witnessed, that you laugh about, that you just shake your head about.
About golf or about...
About golf as a caddy.
The thing that amazes me the most as a caddy is that, 5 minutes can make the difference between an environment in which you're supposed to be chatty and happy and you know, pumping up your golfer, and then you're supposed to keep your mouth shut and, you know, show up, keep up, and shut up. So the kind of the mercurial nature of your employer as a caddy, I think, is probably the thing that most caddies have to be really, really sensitive to, the right mood and the right words at the right time.
Also, what about the personalities of the different golfers?
It's not as diverse as in other sports. Golf is just not as diverse a sport, and so people tend to come from similar backgrounds. So it's easy to find common ground in golf really, really quickly. There's a lot of conversation, a lot of camaraderie around golf, which is really what I love to be around. People can find that common ground really quickly.
I also think that there probably is a challenge, and I've said this before, I do not play golf because I'm not into self-abuse. and I also have said when I play tennis, I make a mistake, 5 seconds later I can forget about it, I've made a good shot. When you make a mistake in golf, Tim, you got all the time that you're looking for.
Right. Yeah, you've got the time spent trudging to wherever the ball is, and then, you know, if you've hit a really bad shot, there's the time spent looking for it, and there's the, and I think the best golfers will tell you that they spend half that time actively trying to erase the swing from their mind and then looking, you know, okay, what's the best way to play this next shot from where it lies?
Lee Trevino is a friend of mine, and I always, when he's on the program, love to ask him about his favorite golf story, you know, what happens to be going around at that time. You having been close to that sport for such a long time, and especially as a caddy, do you have a favorite sports golf story?
I don't. I really got to plead ignorant on that. It's, the golf world is so fluid, and every week is so much different than the last. Everything just rolls together. So I can't think of a single anecdote that jumps to mind that way.
What is a particular shot that you remember more than anyone for somebody that you were caddying for?
Oh, the best, my favorite shot of all time was not as I was a caddy. It actually occurred on the tour. It was at Pebble Beach, and Tom Watson was making his last appearance in the U.S. Open
on the 17th.
One of the inland holes. I think it was 13, maybe. It was a par 3, downhill par 3, and there really wasn't much of a crowd around the tee because it was one of the inland holes. But I was there, and he almost put it in the hole on the fly, and it stopped about 6 inches from the hole, and everybody was going nuts. And he looked over at him, and he was just kind of calmly tapping down the turfs, you know. And then he walked the entire length of the hole with everyone standing ovation, and he still looked like it was his first golf tournament, like he was very surprised that people were reacting so wonderfully. And then he got to the green and the adulation, and he just was very, very the picture of modesty and the picture of humility. And I think that was probably his last birdie in a U.S. Open.
Yeah, the one that most people talk about is at Pebble Beach on the 17th when he was over on the, as you were facing the hole from the water, over on the right side, he came out of the bunker and, of course, holed out the shot. Just unbelievable.
Right.
Tim, hold on just a second. I want to talk to you about this book. Tim Forbes is with us. I want you to check out the book. It's called It's Game Time Somewhere, How 1 Year, 100 Events, and 50 Different Sports Changed My Life. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's sports talk show, Sports Byline.